Today, we're joined by Chris Miller, Director of Cumberland County Emergency Medical Services. Emergency Medical Services play a critical role in responding to some of life's most urgent moments, requiring quick decisions, skilled teamwork, and a commitment to serving the community around the clock. As EMS Director, Miller oversees the operations of the department while helping ensure residents receive timely, high-quality emergency care when they need it most. Today, we'll talk about that journey in emergency medical services, what it takes to lead a team of first responders, the challenges and rewards of the profession, and the future of EMS in Cumberland County. Chris, it's good to have you back on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been a little bit, but glad to have you on. We always want to focus on public safety and what that entails and the role of emergency medical services, EMS, in the county. And there's some things we're going to touch on today that we did not cover last time, which is a good reason to have you back on. Everything going well in Cumberland County right now. It's hotter than you know what outside, but do you see calls increase because of the heat?
Yeah, you always have, just like in cold weather, you have some cold weather related stuff going on. But yeah, obviously, and when it starts getting as hot and humid as it is right now, we do have a lot of heat related. Do definitely have an uptick in heat related injuries, as far, you know, heat strokes and such stuff such as that. So yeah,
I know we're not doctors,
right?
And we didn't stay at a Holiday Inn last night, so we're not going to play one,
right?
But if you were to give any advice to an individual about being outside and getting too hot, what would that be?
Biggest thing is staying hydrated. Always drink lots of water. Limit your time, you know, and obviously you have to look at the heat index because humidity does play a role in that as well. You know, my wife, she just got back from Las Vegas. The heat out there is a lot different than it is here.
It is.
The heat out there would be well over 100 degrees, and she's like, it's unbelievable because I'm not sweating.
Yeah.
Here, it's 85, and the humidity's close to that, and you're sweating like crazy. So.
Yeah, so I've been doing my outside work at 5 a.m. in the morning,
right.
You know, because
yeah.
It's cooler. The sun's not beating down on you. At 10, 11 o'clock in the day, 4, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, 2 or 3, it's just unbearable, you know, and it's I know there's people that do it, and thank God for those people outside all day. Stay hydrated. And don't let Chris or any other ambulance show up because you got overheated. But, you know, my grandmother had a heat stroke,
right,
you know, in 2007, and it forever changed her.
Right.
And it's just – and I tell you, it's not funny because it was serious, but – the reason she had a heat stroke, it's the middle of August, it's 95 degrees outside, and she refused to put air conditioning in her house. Never had it 80 years, never had air conditioning in her house. Thought the windows being open and a fan blowing would keep her cool, and she just got too hot and had a heat stroke. And about lost her that day, you know, but it affected her for 3 more years. But, yeah, it's hot, and people need to be careful. I do have a funny story from that. She used to tell me when I was a kid – when I'd mow her yard, my brother and I would push mow her yard. Her yard was big, and it was on a hill. It'd take us 2 hours together to push mow it. And she always said, wear a hat, because she said you didn't want your body temp to escape your head. And I thought, she's not a doctor. Is that true? Is that true, Chris? Do you know? Have you ever heard that?
I've never heard that. I mean, you know, in the wintertime, keep your, because obviously you do lose a large majority of your body heat through your head. But you want to keep it in the wintertime, but not
summertime.
In the summertime.
Yeah.
I can see getting sunburned. But no, I'm not keeping a hat on during the – but, you know, I see a lot of these guys out mowing yards, and they've got – of course, I think a lot of that's for sun protection for, you know, the skin cancer and stuff such as that. But yeah, I've not heard that one.
Well, so in the middle of summer, your calls, of course, I don't know how many calls – how many calls roughly do you have a year?
Around 15,000.
Does it fluctuate during parts of the year, or does it stay pretty steady?
Yeah, it does. You know, we have a lot more, you know, with the particularly in the summertime, we do have a little increase in automobile accidents on I-40 just due to the the traffic increase, people vacationing and such and traveling up and down I-40, and everybody knows how much traffic is on I-40.
Sure.
So, you know, every county that is, you know, and I'm sure Putnam County is the same way. If they look at their numbers, they probably tell you the same thing. They have a little increase in automobile accidents. But, yeah, we do. You know, when people out, there's more people out water skiing, you know, and like I said, heat-related injuries as well. People,
sure.
More people out playing golf, stuff like that. So, yeah.
Do you have to go to Fairfield Glade a lot for the golf course, people getting too hot?
Yeah, we do on occasion. We do have you know, there's a lot more people playing golf in the summertime,
mm-hmm.
You know, and they do, you know, I had a call out there back years ago. Probably one of the worst breaks in somebody's ankle I ever saw.
Oh, my goodness.
Gentleman stepped off of just a ledge, and he just twisted the wrong way. And I showed up, and this guy was as calm and cool, because when we got to the call, I'm like, well, who am I here for? And he said, me. And I look, and he's like, well, I said, what's your injury? He said, look at my ankle and his bone.
Oh.
Was sticking out of the skin.
Ow.
And actually had hit the – it actually had a blade of grass on the end of it where it had come through his leg.
Oh, my
word. I don't want to get too graphic.
Sure.
But it was rough. But he was just cool and didn't want anything for pain.
Golly. So, man, that's a man right there. He's tough. Right. Well, Cumberland County is great. We mentioned this last time you were here. It's great. There's so many things to do there. But part of having those attractions, golf, the state parks – the scenery, the trails, the hiking, the waterfalls, part of that, that's wonderful. But part of it's having responders, first responders like you all, to be there for safety and to respond to people that are in need. And that's an instance of that. So that's a service, right? The county's provided, and most everybody's passed their budgets by now in the county. And so part of that process, and we're going to get deep, folks, a little bit, and it may roll into the next segment, and that's fine. But we're going to talk about funding and how services work in county, especially for public safety and EMS, because sometimes folks lose sight or forget why you exist and why your department exists. You exist for them, for the citizens of the county, to respond and aid them when they're in need, and that would be an emergency call or a transport or whatever it is. And how you're funded mainly is through property taxes. Now, yes, there is billing for a call. So let's talk about that, Chris. When you go on a call, what happens then as far as the billing process goes?
Well, obviously, we do every call we go on, we do a patient care report, and there's a lot of things that we check boxes that we have to fill, and a lot of information for every person that we, before we went technically paperless, there was probably 8 to 10 pieces of paper for every patient that we hauled. It's a lot of paperwork. So that's one reason they wanted to go. I won't say we're still not completely paperless, but we're a lot less than what we used to be. But there's a lot of information that we have to put to for us to submit. Of course, we got a third-party biller. We send it to them, and then they bill the, you know, TennCare, Medicare, Medicaid, or whatever, you know, the respective insurance is. But yeah, there's a lot of cost and a lot of stuff that goes into it. And, like you said, it is obviously, a large majority of that is funded by taxpayer dollars.
Yeah. I'm assuming you do like other EMS directors every year at budget time or at the end of year, you ask to write off an uncollectible amount.
Mm-hmm.
And so that uncollectible amount is derived because of what?
Well, if somebody is on a government-subsidized Medicare or TennCare or anything like that, they have got a maximum rate that they will pay. And we can bill as much as we want to. You know, an average call we would bill would be around $1,200 to $1,500. But Medicare and TennCare is only going to pay what they're going to pay, which is usually around $400 to $500. So anything over that, we can't bill them for it.
Sure.
And we can't pursue them legally. It has to be written off. So, you know, that adds up when you run 15,000 calls, and a good portion of those are, everybody knows we have a large retirement community up there that are on fixed incomes, and they've got the government subsidized insurance. So anything over that cutoff, we have to write off. The county has to write off because we can't bill for that.
Yeah, and I think even county commissioners, I'm not being critical at all, but they, especially new ones, may not understand that process.
Yeah, I've had several from other counties, county commissioners. I had a county commissioner from Putnam County back several years ago. That was, you know, Putnam County. Yeah, they wrote off this so many $100,000. You know, and that's ridiculous. And for whatever reason, he came to me. I don't think necessarily just for that, but just in conversation, I was like, well, we write off several $100,000 a year too.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to explain to him why that is. And just like I just told you, it's like we can bill everybody $3,000. And just because you go up on your rate, you're going to be writing more off on the end because it's going to be uncollectible.
Sure. Yeah, county commissions allow or support EMS director going up on the rate, but you may not. It may not make a difference because you may not collect that increase.
No, the only, from what I see, the only time that benefits you is somebody's got a commercial insurance. You know, and we've got this area is a high retirement, low income area, and a lot of those people are on fixed incomes or for whatever reason, and you can go up on your rate, but you're going to have a higher, that number at the end of the year that you write off is going to go up for that reason.
Yeah, a lot of counties use third-party billing companies to help them collect. Do y'all do a third-party? Yeah. That's very common. And basically, how does that work? How does the third-party billing work?
Well, we do our paperwork there. We do our patient care report is what we refer to it as. And like I said, that's where we do all our check boxes. We say what we done on the call. We bill for, we have a base rate that we charge, and then we got a mileage rate. Then we got for every service that we provide, EKGs, any kind of medication. We do charge for that stuff. And obviously, once we get that done, we send it over for a third-party biller, and then they bill it to whatever the respective insurance is. But they do take a percentage of that. They don't do it for free. It is a service that's provided, and they do take a percentage of our, whatever they bill out.
But my response is always collecting something is better than collecting nothing.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So I don't have a problem as a commissioner allowing or supporting you all in any county and the EMS director using third-party billing because, one, it keeps you from hiring somebody to do it. That time can be used by your staff to focus on response. And two, you're going to get something for it. So anyway, Chris Miller, Director of Cumberland County Emergency Medical Services, is my guest today. We'll be back in just a moment after this break. Welcome back. Chris Miller is my guest. He is the EMS director in Cumberland County, Tennessee. Glad to have him back on with us. We're talking about some things that we didn't touch on the first time he was on. And I love talking about diving deeper into how things work and the EMS and the role of EMS. And we know what that role is. And we talked about it. And we talked about some of the funding of that and what helps pay the bills to operate as an emergency services department. And Chris, we mentioned, you all have a billing process. You're not always going to collect everything because people are on government subsidies that pay a max, and then the rest of it just goes uncollected. And every year, all EMS directors across the state are writing a particular amount off. It's common. The county commission has to approve that write-off. Audit understands that. They make a note in the audit, the compliance audit every year. That's part of business. That's part of the way government works. So there are some counties, and I don't know how many. I've never done a study, and you don't have to say yes or no. Some counties, EMS, through their patient billing, are almost able to fund their budget, that's close to it. Well, if they can't, then property tax money funds it, and I will say it's my property tax dollars is well worth funding the EMS because I know they're going to be there if I'm in need, right?
Right.
But that's how government works. So the ambulance service bills out for a service. They collect what they can, which is a relief off the taxpayer, but then what they can't collect will fall back to the county funding, which comes from usually property taxes or some other form of local revenue. Do you have conversations with commissions a lot? I know we talked about the write-offs, but do you have conversations with commissioners a lot about the funding of EMS? Do they ask you a lot of questions, or do they just understand the normal course of business and understand what you need to operate?
Well, the beneficial thing for me is a large majority of the county commissioners have been in county government for a while, so they understand. And as our county mayor has, Alan Foster, he was on chairman of the budget committee for several years before he ran for mayor, and he was county commissioner before that, and in his political journey. But yeah, they are as far as I can speak for my county commission, they're very understanding, and they do have some questions. They make sure that we're, anything I ask for, they do want me to justify it. But they do understand that's just part of business. Part of doing business is there's going to be loss. You're not going to – and truly, EMS, emergency services and stuff like that is not designed to make money. We want to make it as cost zero as possible, get as close to that as we possibly can. But – it's very hard to do in today's society. So
yeah, EMS doesn't exist as a for-profit entity,
no,
right? It's
no.
a governmental service that hopefully is subsidized through billing and payments, but it doesn't always work that way. So part of the, you know, and if you look at county government budgets, and this is across the board, so it's every department generally that has personnel, right? So all county government departments that have personnel, typically the personnel cost is about 60-70% of a budget. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure yours is somewhere in that area. So 60% of your budget is most likely salaries and benefits.
Right.
Right. Staff to do the job, to respond to calls, to help people. The other is going to be your equipment, your trucks that you have to operate, that you go on calls with. So let's talk about that. How many shifts per day do y'all have, Chris?
Well, we've got between eight and 10 trucks a day. In Cumberland County, usually we're right around 10, and eight of those are ALS trucks. Two of them are what we refer to as our BLS truck, which does a lot of convalescent hospital discharge transfers from, you know, nursing home maybe to a dialysis center or, you know, such calls such as that. But yeah, we run usually around 10 trucks in Cumberland County, and let's see. In the city of Crossville, we usually have 4 ALS trucks, and then we got 1 BLS truck. So usually we've got 5 trucks covering the city of Crossville.
So as far as your fleet goes right now, are you trying to buy new – do you need new trucks? Do you need new chassis? Do you need new boxes? What do you need right now?
It's always a process. I mean, you know, I think we touched a little bit on this before, is, you know, you're always thinking ahead. We've got – as of today, we've got 14 trucks that we have. Obviously, not all of those. Some of them are backup, what we refer to as backup calls, because we're always having these things get ran so hard and for obvious reasons that we always have, you know, for maintenance, they want to be down for maintenance for a day or two for maintenance or some sort of catastrophic failure sometimes, but that's pretty rare. But we have, like I said, we got 14 that we run, and 10 of those are usually on the road daily. But we usually have one that's been remounted, so, you know, we've always got one that's been remounted, putting a new chassis.
What would a brand new ALS truck cost right now?
Well, we just took possession of one to add to our fleet this morning, actually, and it was without any equipment, with just the truck and the load system, was $316,000.
And that's without the equipment.
And there's probably another, you know, couple of $100,000 worth of equipment that's going to go on there after you start purchasing, you know, a radio's $25,000 load. You know, of course, it's already got the load system, but a stretcher's $25,000. A cardiac monitor's $60,000. You know, so you're... Then you start getting into the, you know, the smaller ticket items, but it does add up, because there's nothing. You put the word medical or tactical or military grade on it, the cost goes through the roof. But
you got to have that kind of grade, that kind of quality to do the job effectively. Right. You don't want a stretcher that's going to break.
No.
With a 250-pound person on there.
Yeah, and that's
or bend or
yeah, and we've got a lot of patients a lot bigger than that. We got 500-600-pound people that we, and those stretchers, they take a beating.
Yeah,
you know, and somebody, we had one that actually broke down the hydraulic motor in one of our stretchers, started leaking the other day, and it was $7,000 just to replace that hydraulic pump for that stretcher. And they're like, can't believe that broke. And I'm like, well, I have to think of the weight that thing has picked up over its, you know, its lifespan.
Sure.
It's mechanical stuff breaks.
Well, what would you guess what a lifespan is for a high quality grade stretcher? Would you
you're looking, you know, probably 8 to 10 years. You know, a lot of it depends on your call volume. Obviously, you know, some services like us and Putnam may not get that much out of them because we run more calls.
Sure.
Where some services that run 2,000 or 3,000 calls a year might get 15 years.
Yeah.
You know, so.
So the cost for an ALS truck with equipment is $500,000.
Yeah, it's $500,000 per truck
And that's what you have to pay for. You have to make the decision. You know, what trucks you need, what equipment you need. And then it has to be paid for, and that, again, that can either come through the billing process for the patients you're serving, or through government funds as property taxes. But it's necessary to do your job.
Right.
It's part of the function, and we're going through this just to let people know, government the reason there's taxes, there's property taxes, sales taxes to pay for governmental services and our essential service, which the state legislature has said EMS is an essential service. I know it's essential for me. I'm 46 years old.
Right.
If I get a heat stroke from golfing, I want you to come get me. You know what I'm saying? So it is essential, but we're trying to break down the cost. We ain't even tapped into other costs of it. But when you have 8 to 10 trucks a day going, I think that's what you said. That's cost, because we ain't talked about fuel.
Right.
And gas prices, we know, has not been normal. So did you ask for an increase in gas this year in your budget?
Yeah.
Of course you did, because it's been sky high. So I'm glad you're back, because we get to talk about these things. Chris Miller is the EMS director, emergency services director in Cumberland County. He's been doing that how long again?
10 years.
10 years. Great experience, great knowledge. We'll be back in just a moment after this break. I'm sorry. Welcome back. Chris Miller, Cumberland County Emergency Medical Services Director, and has been doing that for 10 years. And he's back with us again, and I'm glad he is, because we really have gotten into some depth about the cost of emergency services, an ambulance service for a county, and what that looks like and how essential that is. We were talking about a cost of an ALS truck, which is a full-service ambulance that's going to get somebody on a response call. It's an emergency call. It's not a transport. I mean, you can use those for transports, I know, but it's not. This does everything, right? So the truck, the chassis, everything, around $500,000 cost after you equip it. My question, Chris, is if you needed one, you know, if you needed to order one today, how long is it going to take you to get that truck?
Well, usually around 18 to 24 months.
So almost 2 years.
Almost 2 years. It might have improved a little bit, but used to be when I first took over back in 2016, if you ordered, the day they received the PO, the purchase order for the truck, they was guaranteed delivery in 110 days. It's not like that anymore, and I don't know that it's ever going to – I don't really understand it. I don't get it, but that's just the way the world works. And, you know, can't believe we're still talking about the effects of COVID 5-6 years later, but they've just never recovered, and I don't know why that is.
And I don't either. And again, I'm not I'm not a ambulance director, a paramedic, EMT. I'm not in that. I'm familiar with it because of my role in county government. And I'm also not a truck manufacturer or vehicle manufacturer, and I'm also not a supplier. But you would think that there is a business or an opportunity for somebody to go make some money and start building ambulances and selling them.
Right.
If it's 24 months, I mean, I almost want to go do that. Now, I don't know where I would start, but goodness gracious, you're not the only one waiting, I know.
Right.
Other counties are having to wait. Other states, I'm sure, are having to wait.
Yeah.
So the process of that is you ask for the truck. Do you go on a state bid, a state supplier, or do you have to go somewhere else?
We do a bid process. We'll put it out to bid. Usually we'll get 2 to 3 bids, and we just go from there.
Sure. Yeah, and it's lowest or best bid is the law when you make a decision on where you're going to buy from. And we didn't talk about this. How much does it cost to do a remount?
It's about half. You know, it's $150,000.
Yeah.
You know, for the type. A lot of that depends on what type unit you got. You know, you've got the truck chassis that are a little bit more expensive. We have a combination of both. We've got what looks like a van front end with a bigger box. Those are a little bit cheaper. There's none that are cheap, but it may be $50,000-$60,000 cheaper than a big, you know, Ford F-450 or a Dodge Ram or something like that. There is a little cost, a little difference in cost, but not much.
Yeah, and we talked about you had 8 to 10 trucks a day, and the reason you do that, and I'll do a comparison in Putnam County. I ran into one of the paramedics a few days ago, and I said, and it was lunchtime, and I said, hey, how's your day going? And he said, wow, it's been crazy busy.
Right.
He normally serves the northern part of Cookeville and that area. And he had to come to Baxter, west of Baxter, for a call because two of the trucks that service Baxter were on two different wreck calls.
Right.
Well, that's why you have that many trucks available.
Right.
Because you never know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the fact that you got that many available to do so. So we talked about the state finally saying EMS is an essential service. It's necessary. We have to have it for counties. We have to have it in Tennessee. What are some of the things they've done to help you all become more efficient, have more opportunities for people to join and serve in EMS?
Well, I was involved. We had a lot of meetings at, you know, at state level and regionally here in the Upper Cumberland, as far as Upper Cumberland Director Association, about, because they'd done a study back several years ago, and I can't remember exactly what year they'd done this study, but, and I don't know if it was just for the state of Tennessee or if it was nationwide, but they, at that time, they estimated that the EMS was going to be out of business in 5 years if we didn't do something to get more people coming in the business, because the rate we had people retiring or just getting out of the, was obviously outpacing the number of people that were coming in. So there's been a big push to get EMT. There's some high schools that are teaching EMT school now. They've also allowed services across the state of Tennessee. I'm not sure on the number. I think initially, I think that number has decreased as far as being able to teach EMT school at the service level. I know us and Putnam are the only two in the Upper Cumberland that are service-based EMT schools, but it has benefited. They've done a few things. You know, they've tinkered with streamlining some school. They done street to medic, which is somebody that had never been an EMT a day in their life could go into EMT school and come out as a paramedic in a pretty relatively short amount of time. I don't know how many people have done that. That's just not something that I'm real big on, me personally. I just think it, you know, the best teacher is time and experience as far as, but there has been some stuff, and us, them allowing us to teach at the service level has probably been the most beneficial for us, because it's allowed us to hire a lot of people that comes out of that EMT school. And I know it's benefited Putnam County as
sure.
well.
So. Yeah. Have you seen more high school students? Have you heard or seen or talked to them and become more interested in being a paramedic?
Yeah. Well, when I came in this business myself personally back in the late 90s, early 2000s, the average age for Cumberland County, and I pretty much everybody that I knew, was probably about 40 to 45. We've got younger. And now we have got, I'd say we're probably more in the 25 to 30 year range now, because we have so many young people that are coming in the business. But it's been a learning curve. This is a hard first job.
Sure.
Or if it's not their first job, it's their first true job. Yeah. Where there's a lot of responsibility, because, you know, we all know what the responsibility is what we do. And that's something that we really try to push on these young kids, and my son being one of them. You know, he got hired by another agency in the Upper Cumberland basically the day he graduated from high school as a driver. And he went pretty quickly. He went to EMT school, and but it was hard as it's a hard first job to understand the gravity of what you're responsible for. And you know, so that's something we really try to let these, and I hate to call them kids, I'll say young adults, because they're adults, but they're this, and that's what I try to explain to them, is that this is a very adult industry that you're trying to get into.
Sure.
And it's very, you know, you can't not pay attention, you know, for a second, because it's just somebody's life. And people always say, Chris, why do you always think worst case scenario? I said that because that's my job.
Right.
I think what is the worst, for every decision you make, what is the worst possible scenario? The best and the worst.
Sure.
And we try to, you know, obviously mitigate as much of that as we can. And, you know, but we try to really instill in these people, and that's in these young adults when they come into this business, is be careful and pay attention to what you're doing, because literally somebody's life could be changed forever because you didn't pay attention for just a few minutes.
Sure.
But it has been beneficial for us as far as getting these young adults into this business. And I think it's helped pretty much everybody in the Upper Cumberland. A few years ago, you know, when we had our Upper Cumberland Director Association meetings here in Cookeville, our organization president would go around the room and say, how's everybody staffing? And just about everybody had openings, multiple. Now, goes around the room, and it's pretty, you know, there's not many counties that have openings, and if they do, it's maybe one or two. You know,
so. Yeah, and you probably don't see as many leaving your county going into another county.
No,
because you're, and we talked about this before. Your commission, your mayor has recognized the need to take care of the employees,
right,
and keep them, retain
mm-hmm.
them.
Yeah.
Recruiting is important, but retaining is just as important.
Absolutely, and it's not always, and there has to be, and that's what I tell people that work for me and other agencies as well, is, you know, it doesn't matter what you pay. If your culture is not good, there has to be balance. And obviously people want to make as much money, and we want people to make as much money. For years and years, you know, the emergency services, you know, whether it's fire, police, or EMS, their pay was just not good. So there has been a big push for people to start making some money, and they're starting to make a little bit, you know, some decent money now. So it has been beneficial for us, you know, and everything has worked out pretty good, but there has to be balance. If your culture is not good, you know, you treat your people terrible, it doesn't matter what you pay them, they're going to leave, because there again, and I keep going back to these studies. We participated in a study. It was a Young Guns. It was called Young Guns, and then they done the Rusty Rooster. And what it was is they had anybody that was under a certain age, I think it was under 25, they had all those people that are EMS come in, and they said, what would be the first thing that would make you leave? And it was management. It wasn't money. It was management.
Sure.
And then they had, you know, they obviously, the older guys come in, and they pretty much said the same thing, you know, but there has to be balance. People have to make a decent wage, but they also have to be treated with some respect and treated well.
Yes. Somebody's motivation may be the way you respond to them and treat them instead of money. It may, their motivation and their value, the way they see their value may be on the way you value them.
Yeah. And as far as my approach is, you know, we do hold people accountable, and we push our folks, and I believe this is pretty much across, and, you know, and this is probably not exclusive to me, but I'm just saying, for my approach, is people want to, for the most part, they do want to be held accountable. They want to know they're working for something that is worthwhile working
sure.
for. If the standard is, you know, down in the basement, that's what you're going to get.
Yeah.
But we try to push these people to say, you know, you're working for something that is very important, and we want your bar to be extremely high. So, and we push people, and we try to give them every opportunity to get to that. So that's kind of our approach, or my approach, and I've tried to instill that into my management team up there as well. So, and they do a pretty good job.
Well said, Chris. I think we'll leave it at that. I'm glad you're here. Thank you again for what you do, the service you provide, you and your staff and your team, for Cumberland County. Again, thanks for being here and being a guest.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, folks, hope you enjoyed it. Chris Miller, director of the EMS in Cumberland County. Remember, it's a lot easier to smile than a frown. Make somebody's day. Be kind to one another. We'll see you next time. Well, that was